You are Locked On Knicks, your daily podcast on the New York Knicks. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team, every day.
Shot blocked. Porzingis with his fourth projection. Courtney Lee for three. Beasley lines up. Ntilikina.
What he does is contagious. He comes and touches.
And across the lane. Baker launches. Jack to Porzingis. Fires up the ball.
Welcome, everybody, to Locked On Knicks, the podcast that's in the 99th percentile of explaining, complaining, and entertaining. I'm your host, James Marcina, a.k.a. Ennis Can't Just Stop, Ennis Won't Just Stop, you. My name is NBA Injury Report on Twitter, and this is episode 328. Damn, that's a lot of sodes. On today's extremely special sode, I'm joined by Jonathan Schulman of Posting and Toasting. You may know him as Ito on Twitter. And we're going to hand out a report card for Ennis Cantor. Yeah, I'm going to do my best to not be too mean, but I'm not a big fan of Ennis Cantor. I like the guy. Oh boy. Alright, before we start this extremely respectful, so two quick reminders. I am still putting together my database. I will never stop putting together my database of great Knicks bars. If you know about a great Knicks bar, send me the details and I will put it on the list. Then I will share it with everyone. We are still doing voicemail bags. We're going to do one at the end of this week. 929-377-5103. Once again, that's 929-377-5103. Call that up. Leave me a question. I will answer it on this week's voicemail bag. All right, let's start the show. Hit it, Marv.
Yes.
So, John, we're here to talk about Ennis Cantor. Now, in NBA circles, you're known as, Ennis Cantor's number one fan. So, Yeah, I'm wondering if you can just talk a little bit about that, how much you love
how much
Ennis
I'm
Cantor.
A fan? Got you.
Mm-hmm. And why?
NY, mm-hmm. New York, got you. I love Ennis Cantor, New York.
You
said NY, and I pretended you said NY, like you called him Ennis Cantor, NY. Yeah, I mean, it really comes across on radiophonically. So,
I do find that on podcast is the best place for wordplay.
Yeah. You can really just, it jumps right off the page.
It really does. No, but seriously, you're not a huge Ennis Cantor fan, as I understand it.
Not especially. But that just makes me, you know, basic. That makes me basic.
I think the basic view of Ennis Cantor is that he's heart and gristle, and he's a gristly heart. And he's also a grizzly heart, and he like fights for his teammates, and he fights for his town, and he does the dirty work and grabs the boards, and you know, I don't know. I feel like that is the basic view of Cantor. So I feel like with this podcast, our goal is to shed some light upon the like crusty butthole of that basic view. And to show people Cantor for who he really is.
Well, yeah, he's not especially good. You know, I'm not really statsy.
Yeah.
I'm not a statsy sportsy guy. So, you know, while he may get a good amount of rebounds and probably shoots decent percentage, because people give him his little, like, 12, 15 footers, so... You know, he's always got that, and if he feels good, he can pop it. That's about all he's good for, a couple boards, a couple buckets, but he's really bad at every single other thing.
Let's break it down bit by bit. I want to start by talking about his defense. Is his defense as bad as advertised? He came over with that rep of... who's that knucklehead over in Oklahoma City with the greasy
Steven
hair?
Adams?
No, with the greasy hair, the coach, the Riley wannabe.
Oh, Billy Donovan.
Billy Donovan, former Florida Gators head coach. That's right. Thank you for...
Former New York Knicks.
Former... is that a thing? Is that true?
Yeah. Oh, that's true.
For like 2 weeks? I forgot that that is true.
I think you had breakfast with them.
Yeah. But Billy Donovan famously said, like, can't play Canner, you know, in the playoffs. And I feel like that is the essence, in some ways, of what makes Canner bad. He has certain matchups where you're like, oh, yeah, you got to get Canner back in. But against any well-constructed team, I feel like that just falls apart. And I think it starts on defense. And I think it starts with just his how he deals with pick and rolls.
Well, defensively, he doesn't know how to deal with a pick and roll. I mean, even if he guesses right, he'll jump out and then just be stuck on that spot. He's got no type of defensive footwork. For all he's good offensively in the low block, with good footwork to get a little up and under and, you know, one more fake and he can get a nice little layup or a hook or whatever. He has none of that on the defensive side because you can't pivot and then just be playing defense.
Right.
If you could pivot, he would be the world's best netball player. And I'm sure 11 people will get that.
I'm not one of them, I got to say. But I do enjoy the reference, even though I don't understand it.
Yeah, I mean, basically, when you take a shot in netball, nobody moves, and you can just sort of, if you can make it over the outstretched hands of the other team, then you made a point. And, like, there's no dribbling or anything like that. Netball is...
Sounds great.
Yeah, it's like this speed walking of 400 meters, but...
It's low impact. I feel like I should start playing
extremely.
Netball. Yeah.
Yeah, netball is definitely for 70-year-olds. But anyway.
So he's lacking lateral quickness.
Oh, completely. And then he just doesn't even have the wit to cover or be in the right spot or also just even tell the frontline defender. So let's say it's Jarrett Jack, right? He doesn't even know enough to be like, oh, screen coming left. What do we want to do? Right. Do we want to send it to the sideline? Do you want to square up? He doesn't even communicate any of these types of simple things. And that's now two people that are out of key. And yeah, it's an advantage going downhill for whoever.
What's going on where
Spencer Dinwiddie can get downhill on Enes Kanter.
Yeah. What is going on with him and running out to the three-point line? Is that laziness? Is that his lack of recognition? Was that poor lineups from Hornacek last season?
You mean on offense?
No, on defense, trying to get out to cover the three-point. I feel like so many times with like him and KP on the floor especially, you'd see one or the other of them being like, ugh, I guess there's a guy in the corner.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of times that's miscommunication. I find that Kanter is the type of guy who's like, well, I don't have enough speed to get out there, so I should be near the rim. Mm-hmm. And then it's like, well, but that's your rotation, so you just have to do the rotation. So he's not – now he has to do a full sprint, which his 0 to 60 is terrible. So he's always got to do these crazy runouts because he decided to – you know, either quit on the play or just be like, well, they'll stop here and take this shot.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know. He's always out of position.
It's interesting. He's bad at defense. When you look at the numbers, I was trying to quantify it a little bit. The Knicks are 3.1 points worse per 100 with him on the floor than off, which doesn't sound that bad, but it's 26th percentile, and it's also his best mark since 2012-13. This is okay. Like evolutionary Kanter. And I use on-off a lot just because I find it interesting. But I do think it's kind of – it's very messy. It's tough to say what's going on with different rotations. But I do think it – I feel like it matters more when you're bad on-off on a bad team – I feel like that matters a little bit more than when you're good on a bad team. Because, like, if you're on a team that just plays shit defense top to bottom, and they're still, like, much worse when you're on the court than off. Like, I feel like his 26th percentile and on-off defensively is not as bad as it would be on an actually competent team, I guess is what I'm trying to say. Like, I don't think that bad number tells the full story with him.
Yeah, I mean, partially the Knicks just have a dearth of just really bad defenders.
Yeah.
I mean, as much as Jarrett Jack tries, he just doesn't get it done. And, you know, Porzingis, I think we agree, is playing out of position defensively. And Ntilikina doesn't get the minutes, but he could cover up a lot of soft spots. Courtney Lee is, you know, fine. Tim Hardaway. Yeah, I mean, you know.
Well, so if he was... Okay. So if Cantor was on, like, a halfway decent defensive team last year, do you think he's someone who is hideable in a way that he becomes a positive?
Is that
ever possible for him?
No, I don't believe so. I think he's the type of guy who, like you said, when there's that one player or situation that plays to his strengths, which is legit, we need to slow the pace down. Mm-hmm. We need a couple just buckets on the block, and we see an advantage here. You know, let's go for 4 minutes with Cantor kind of as the tip of the spear. But beyond that, I don't know what this guy does.
I think that's part of what makes him so confusing for some people, because you do watch games, and if you're not watching all of them, you'll see a game where he is a clear advantage. But it's going to be against a poorly constructed team, or certainly a team without a certain kind of center, the kind of center that all centers are moving toward and that more and more teams employ every year. And, like, that's his problem. Like, I feel like if he was around 20 years ago, he'd probably be one of the, I don't know, five best centers in the league. I mean, you're talking about, like, a golden age of center, so maybe that's not true, but, like, 10?
Yeah, I don't think so.
Like, 10?
Yeah. No, because he doesn't even have the size.
In, like, 1998?
No. No, I'm sorry.
I want to look up 1998 top centers.
So, I mean, the thing about Cantor is, like, he's the type of guy that actually finishes, like, without athleticism. So, like, you know, that sounds good. Oh, he's finesse. But he's not really a finesse. He's kind of a force finisher.
You're right.
He's the type of, like, I was watching his 2017-18 highlights, right? Because I just wanted to be like, all right, look, he can really do this and this. He's good at it. It's just like, no, he's terrible. There was this one highlight where he goes to dunk on Serge Ibaka. Uh-huh. And he dunks. It's a highlight for sure. He gets it. But, you know, Ibaka jumps too high to block the shot. And Cantor just sort of, like, you know, crunches it in underneath Ibaka's, like, armpit. And, you know, that's the type of issue that Cantor has. It's like he's not even athletic enough to make great plays. And that's evident. But, I mean, sure, he's strong.
That's
and
it.
A solid base, and, you know, if he up fakes you two times and you turn one way and then gets you in the air finally, yeah, he can make a little turn over the right shoulder or whatever. But honestly, like, what else is the guy good for?
All right.
He's 4 minutes of good basketball, a good offensive basketball, and then get him off the floor. Don't get me going.
I'm with you 100%. I want to talk about some things that Enes Kanter is good for, some rebounding numbers, some efficient offense. But before we do that, I just want to remind everyone that you were listening to Locked On Knicks, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. All right, let's talk about rebounding with Enes Kanter. This is something that I think this is becoming like the... This podcast isn't really mean to Cantor. It's mean to people who like Cantor because we're just referring to it as like the basic view of Cantor. But the basic view of Cantor would include, you know, giving him props for his rebounding. Offensive rebounding, he was 98th percentile. I think defensive rebounding, he was like 95th percentile.
All right, let's hold on. Offensive rebounding.
Yeah, let's talk about it.
Great. He gets what, 3 or 4 a game?
Mm-hmm.
Something like that? So
yes.
How many does he go for that he doesn't get? You said he's the 98th percentile?
Yep, uh-huh, on offensive rebounding. Yep.
So he gets a lot of them. But nevertheless, get him or don't get him, when we're going the other way, he's not quick enough to get back on defense and get his man.
Yeah.
I feel like that's a constant, like, even if it's not, doesn't end up being the problem in the possession, it's a concern for the whole team, and we have to cover for this guy.
I think, I really agree with you, like, so much. I think offensive rebounding is wildly overrated, so I was trying to kind of look for a couple of indicators statistically that I could point out on the podcast. And one of them, you just mentioned, transition defense. When you're crashing the offensive board so hard, it's really hard to get back. Like, that makes sense. That's a pretty basic concept to grasp. But, like, when he's on the court versus off, his effect on how much transition offense the opposing team runs, he's in the 13th percentile. So, like, people are getting out in transition way more when he's on the court than when he's off compared to other centers throughout the league. And I think something else that he does, which seems too ridiculous to be true, but I swear it is that rather than play help defense, this is now we're talking about defensive rebounding, but he's around 95th percentile there. I think he just turns his back on the play to try to position himself for the rebound, which, like...
Oh, constantly.
Defensive rebounds are important, but he's 29th percentile in block percentage. Like, he's this beast who can, like, eat glass constantly. You know, if you're that much of a beast, why aren't you protecting the rim at all? I think part of it is what you said about his athleticism, which is lacking. But another part is his approach. Like, he's just not looking to help out. He's just looking to get rebounds. And I think, like, I like Enes Kanter as a human being, even though I find him, like, corny and annoying, which we'll get to in a little bit. I feel like he's a good guy. But I also feel like he knows what he needs. Like, he's trying to make money, which is, like, good for him. But, like, I feel like he's trying to get points and rebounds to, like, pad those stats and get a contract, which is cool, but, like, not good for winning basketball.
Well, it's like they say, you know, like, the star knows how to find the camera. And, I mean, Kanter is exactly that person.
Mm-hmm.
He knows how to find the camera insofar as you get these critical stats that, you know, oh, well, he got a double-double. He had whatever, however many double-doubles all year, like – I don't know the number. But, you know, like, people really hang on to that. And I think, you know, part of that armor was pierced a little bit with Westbrook going for triple-doubles and people being like, yeah, but you're not as great as it sort of feels.
Yeah, that's a good point.
So, like, the double-double obviously can't be as valuable as the triple-double and must be, as such, even more worthless. So, not a big fan of Kanter's stat chasing because, I mean, like you said, it just takes you out of possessions.
And yeah, I think it's conscious. Like, that's my read. You know, I can't say it for sure. And maybe he's just maximizing what he's good at. And God bless him. I'm not trying to say the guy shouldn't try to get as much money as he can. But when we're talking about how good he is, you know, and what he's doing out there, my read is that he is chasing those stats. I really do think he is.
Yeah, he's definitely the type of guy that's, you know, what can his teammates do for him instead of what can I do for them?
So what do you make? I mean, I was going to talk about that a little bit later, but he makes a lot of noise about how Russell Westbrook taught him to, like, be mean and not help people up. And I think a lot of Knicks fans connect with that. I know I sort of do on some level. I don't think I would go so far as to be like, how dare these guys like each other, you know, when it's the whole, like, oh, they grew up on the AAU circuit, and I understand that, you know. But you do want to see when they're, as a fan, you want to see when they're competing some, like, animosity. It's just more fun that way.
I guess. I want to see them win, and to be honest, like, the person that I feel like did the most amount of winning through, I mean, I guess Jordan, whatever, but in the more modern times, mm-hmm. is Tim Duncan, and he gave everybody completely nothing to work with.
Yeah, that's a good point.
So, I mean, Cantor could just as well do that. And also, just that sensibility of like, oh, if you don't help somebody up, you're doing a good job. That's like this 90s nostalgia that I find useless. Because if you would just want to go a little further back, well, Clyde Frazier, he gave you nothing to go on constantly. Right. So you didn't know how to get into this guy's head. Cantor, you can get into his head.
No, that's a great point.
I mean, he might act like, no, I'm going to be tough right now, and I'm not going to take it, and I'm going to pander to the crowd. But, like, you know, people know when they've gotten to you.
No, that's a great point. And I do think, you know, when people talk about him, like, sticking up for Frank on the court against LeBron or something, like, that's maybe fine in the moment. But all that shit afterward, when you're obviously someone who is not even close to LeBron's level, and you're, like, fake beefing with him, and then saying, right, please come here afterward, and, like, sharing Photoshops with LeBron in a Knicks jersey wearing KP's number, and all this stuff that doesn't really matter, does, like, kind of add up and matter a little bit, and, like, add a little bit of a distraction in a way that I don't think helps the team. I don't know how much it hurts it, but I don't think it's positive.
So my thought on Cantor is always kind of like, he seems like a great and helpful friend, and a bad and unhelpful teammate. Mm. And, like, you know, I'm like you said, I'm happy for him. I hope he gets as much money as he can get. It's not about him as a person.
Yeah.
It's just the amount of deficiencies that he just sort of impacts or puts onto the entire team is just, it kills me. I can't take it.
I want to poke a hole in a couple more things that he's supposedly good at, but also give him credit because he does some things okay. He is very efficient offensively. Just a couple numbers. Points per shot attempt, he's in the 84th percentile. He's got 1.25 points per shot attempt. His effective field goal percentage, granted he doesn't take shots really outside of the paint. I think he took two threes all of last year, but his effective field goal percentage is 59.4. which is 81st percentile. He's an 84% free throw shooter. That was in the 92nd percentile for centers. And I do give people shit all the time, especially on the Knicks last year, for all these long mid-range twos. And he was in like the 42nd percentile for long mid-range. All his shots came at the rim. I think he's good at finishing through contact. And that's sort of as far as I can go offensively, as far as his pluses go. But I think, I'm curious if you think there's anything else, although I can guess by your general tenor that there's not. But before we get to that, I just want to say that my, like, overarching thing with Cantor, and maybe I should have started with this, but is that I feel like even the things that he does well, they come at, like, this cost. He does them in a way that is taking away from other things. It doesn't come, like, in the flow of something that helps the team. It all kind of, like, comes at the expense of something else. But before we kind of get to that end of it, am I missing anything offensively that, like, he does well that perhaps I'm... I guess he's an okay screener?
Okay.
Okay? You know, definitely better than KP right now.
Well, I mean, come on. That's like saying, yes, walls are better than street posts as screeners. But... yeah, no.
Anything else?
He's really good at babysitting the ball, either in the post or, you know, 28 feet from the hoop, not knowing what to do with it.
He's a black hole, right? I mean,
he's a babysitter.
Yeah, he's he actually. I was looking up numbers, and he had a higher assist percentage than I thought. It was a 55th percentile for bigs, but assist to usage rate was much worse, 34th percentile. So, like, given how frequently he shoots, he should be passing a lot more.
Well, that's another thing. Going back to... So I can't find anything good, but a good thing he does is offensive rebounds. Well, one of the easiest or probably higher percentage shots in the game is three-pointers off of offensive rebounds. Well, so if you're getting a lot of those things, shouldn't you be kicking it out to open three-point shooters? Yep. Isn't that an obvious goal that you should have in mind?
Yeah, and he doesn't.
Yeah, well, don't help him up.
He doesn't have that vision. And because he is so one-track minded, like, you know, he gets it in the post and it's pretty much going up. He turns the ball over a lot. 14% turnover percentage, which is 42nd percentile. And yeah, I mean, he doesn't provide spacing. You know, he's someone who, maybe you could say that's good that he's not forcing things. And that's probably true. Like, I think on some level, he lives within his limitations in a way that's positive.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Right? But those limitations hurt a lot because a lot of times there was just such a clogged lane when he was in because you're trying to drive, you know, fans are like, why isn't Frank Nilla keen to drive more? I can't put this on Cantor. I'm trying to.
No, Frank was really atrocious.
That has nothing to do with Cantor. But, like, you know, the rare Nick who could get into the paint, a lot of times Cantor was standing there. You talk about, like, pick and rolls with KP or something. He'd be trying to roll to the rim, and there'd be nowhere to go.
And they did a lot of high-low stuff with Cantor and KP. And, you know, the modern game is just like, all right, you want to be, you know, 16 feet from the hoop at top of the key. Well, you can have that shot as long as you're there. Just go ahead and take it, and we'll just sort of hedge and wait for you to make this pass. And now Porzingis is doubled or vice versa, and it's just like, it's just a bad.
Yeah,
that's on Hornacek, but that was bad, no, and that totally was a constant focus.
And I think the thing that was the most, like, damning stat that I came across that I didn't expect to see was when we talk about everything that Cantor was this past year, you know, he's kind of lumbering. He focuses on offensive rebounds, sometimes at the detriment of whatever, although he's, like, efficient and he shoots around the rim. Like, you'd think they would be a decent half-court team offensively with him on the floor. But they were actually almost 4 points worse per 100 half-court plays.
Yeah, I believe that.
With him on the court than off. Like, he's just, if he has any skills, you'd think they'd go into, like, that style of play. And yet, all the things that takes away from what he does well, like, you know, we talked about him not moving the ball, not being able to space the floor and all that kind of stuff. In the end, it's like a big, it's a big detriment to the team. I mean, I would feel remiss if I didn't say that, you know, he's someone in his personal life who, like, obviously there's a lot of reason to admire how he deals with, you know, the political situation in his country, and I really respect him standing up for all that and dealing with.
Yeah, I wouldn't be able to handle that, to be perfectly honest.
I don't think I would be able to stick up for myself the same way he has. It's truly terrifying. But, like, what? But it extends to his personal life too, because then he has that weird joke where he's like, "I'm coming back to the Knicks," and he uses the Donald Trump "Make Knicks Great Again."
Like, yeah,
it's his joke to make. It's not something that I can, like, really say, like, I would never be like, "Fuck Enes Kanter" for that. But it sort of gets to the heart of what's frustrating about him. He's got this, like, weird lack of I don't know.
Well, I mean, he knows he's annoying, but he's not exactly perturbed by it.
Yeah. And it's like, in that sort of, like, it's I guess it's weird to me that this personality trait, this annoyingness, like, extends from his own just, like, personal off the court life to, like, the things he does on the court. It's strange how much of a through line there is. Maybe that's me trying to ham-fistedly shove a narrative in there, but it's like, I don't know. There's a weird synergy there between his off-court and on-court annoyingness. I don't really know what to make of that, but yeah. What do we expect out of Cantor next year? Before we get to grades, we've talked about what he was this past season, our general frustration with him. Do you believe at all in this three-point shot that he's been showing off a little bit?
No.
Why not?
No.
I don't either, but I'm curious why you don't.
I mean, you know, typically, if you try to figure out who's in those games, they're, you know, some of the 10 worst defenders in the NBA. So, you know, you guys should all be flexing on offense, and they are. So, but also, I don't know, he sort of, like, lurches forward. Yeah. It looks like there's a lot of extra effort. Like, I don't know, when you step out only five more feet, I don't want to see like three more actions of effort in your jump shot. I don't know. It's his shot, his 3-point shot is, it's like bedhead. So like it might look good, but only kind of once a week.
And you can't replicate it. Oh man,
your
hair,
your bedhead looks good.
Yeah.
But like, in all seriousness, your mom shouldn't let you go out like that. So I don't know. That's his jump shot to me.
Do you think his defense can improve next season at all? Is there anything there that's like, well, an effort thing or a coaching thing, or do you think he's kind of stuck being who he is on that end of the floor?
So certainly if the team can come together schematically and really just force their hand, I think that the team can improve defensively. And if you limit Cantor's time against, you know, particularly against starting units, you know, he could show statistical improvement, but I really just, he's dead in the water all the time. He's going to get picked on constantly, and, you know, people are going to see him in the lane and they're going to try and go up and over him, and they'll be able to.
What do you think his next contract will be?
Oh, well, shit. What did Kyle O'Quinn just got, like, $5 million?
4.2 something? Or something. It was less 4.2. Than the Knicks could offer him, which was, like, I think 4.6, something like that.
Okay, he'll get 6.5.
I like this. Okay, so let's give him a grade. What grade are we giving him for last season?
F. Yeah. I mean, come on.
I'm just struggling with like F plus, D minus, maybe.
No, just F.
He gets an F.
It's an F.
He gets an F. Thank you very much for joining me, John. Why don't you tell the people where they can find you online?
Postingandtoasting.com. Once in a while, I'm not good at writing anything, so I don't write stuff.
How about Twitter?
And then Twitter at Aighto. AIGHTTHO. That's me.
All right. Thank you, John.
Hey, thank you.
All right, that's it. Thank you guys so much for listening to Locked On Knicks. If you got a moment, rate us on iTunes. Subscribe to the show if you have not already. Tell your friends about the sensation that is Locked On Knicks if you have not already. Follow us on Twitter at Locked On Knicks for bonus takes and general camaraderie, or at NBA Injury Report for jokes and jokes and jokes about basketball. Be chill to each other. Easier said than done. I don't always follow this advice, but I try to, and you should too. Spay and neuter your pets. No excuses. If it's yellow, let it mellow. If it's brown, flush it down. Pee-pee doesn't smell that much, but poo-poo does a lot. Always salt the pasta water. It's the only chance you got to flavor that pasta. And take that for data. Biggie's better than Black Thought. Peace!